This evening, we're going to go back to Proverbs chapter 22, verse 6, as we talk about bringing up children. The important thing about children is that they are a blessing, especially when you finally convince your daughter that you're not older than Jesus. I got a text this past week. Dawn said she's having trouble convincing Veronica that I was younger than Jesus. She kept thinking I was older than Jesus. But I asked her tonight, and she said, no, Jesus is much older than I am. So that's always good to know. In Proverbs, we find so much information to help us understand about children. Now, many of you here, most of you here, don't have children at home. So we might look at this and say, where do I benefit from this? And it can be easy to say, well, you know, here is something that doesn't apply to me in God's Word, but we really have to pay attention because I don't know if you realize this, but we have children running around this joint. We have my children, we have neighborhood kids, we have other kids, and if you pay attention, you'll notice they watch you. We are their teachers. Some of these kids that come on Tuesday night and even on Sundays, we almost appear to be the only ones in their lives that are producing structure and rules and helping guide them in the way they should go. Some of these kids, they come and you can tell that there's no discipline, there's no attention given, there's no learning that goes on at home that should go on at home. And these kids are learning it here. And I was talking with a couple of people, with my wife and then another person from here, and just observing how some of the kids that have been coming from the beginning of Awana or on Sundays, some of these kids have really changed quite a bit in the way that they behave and whatnot. They've been here enough. They know the expectations, even the enforcement of those expectations. And it's really changed them, at least as far as we're concerned here. Our hope and our goal is that the parents will come part of the process. And so, Lord willing, that they will be coming here and gaining instruction that we give through Sunday school, through junior church, through Awana, through the church services. Well, we have tremendous ministries to the children. Vacation Bible schools is really not that far away. And we have an opportunity to impact these kids for the Lord, even if the parents aren't involved. And Lord willing that the parents will become involved by seeing the changes that are taking place in their own kids. We do not replace the parents, but we come alongside and try to help the parents be able to develop homes that are happy and are following God. So while much of this may not pertain to you directly, make sure that you recognize that does pertain to you in a less direct way, in the fact that you are dealing with these kids every time you come. And that's important. What kinds of things are we to do? Matthew chapter 19, verses 13 and 14, the little children were brought to Jesus that he might put his hands on them and pray for them and bless them. But the disciples, they said, oh, you know, go away. You know, this really isn't for kids. This is kind of for adults. You know, adults understand what's going on. They understand the theology, the philosophy happening. They understand the teaching. It affects them directly. And we know what kids do. Kids get under feet. And so, you know, we don't want to disturb the master. You know, these crying kids or these kids that just aren't doing what they're supposed to do. And as a result, you look and you say, oh, it's too bad that they said that. Jesus rebukes the disciples and says, let the little children come to me and do not forbid them, for of such is the kingdom of heaven. You know what? These children are vital as well. I am under the impression, now it's only based on one text in our scriptures, really, the scriptures talking about David and his son, the son that he lost, that died as a result of judgment against David. I am convinced that there is an age where a child is ignorant and God's grace is sufficient for a child of such age that cannot put two and two together, that if they were to pass away, they'll go to heaven. There comes a point in time, and I don't think it's a particular age for each person. I think what it is there is a point where there's an understanding, an awareness of what's going on around them, and an awareness of God as they're taught, that then they become accountable to God for making their heart right with Him. I assume it's a young age, but it's, such age is not given. That being the case, we know that there's a point in young children's lives where they are accountable before God. And we are reaching those through our ministries here at Park Lane Baptist Church. When we see children, it should excite us, not just for the sake of having children, but for the sake of an opportunity to minister to them and also to their parents. Jesus says, let them come to me. On one hand, we're always respectful of the parents, but when a child comes and wants to be saved in Awana, we don't say, let's get permission from your mom first. Why? Jesus says, let them come. And so we need to make sure that our ministry is including these young ones. Proverbs 22:6, train up a child in the way he should go. When he's old, he will not depart from it. The question becomes, how do we train up a child and how do we minister to these children in the church? How do we train up a child? I remember being told a story, I don't know if I had shared it with you yet, being told of a story of my mother-in-law was babysitting for a person that was a psychologist. And the kid was an absolute terror, refused to listen to anything, was just, in fact, a royal brat. And she never babysat for him again. She told the dad, and the dad actually expressed appreciation to the kid. He said, I'm so glad that you are willing to express yourself that way. To freely, you feel that you can freely express yourself. It took the kid out for ice cream. Now, of all kinds of people that should know about children, we find that the world does not. There's a thought that man is naturally good, and so if you just encourage people to do the right thing, they'll do it. Well, that's not true. There's training that needs to take place. Part of this training includes love. Love is something we take for granted. It's something that we say we have for somebody or something. It's something that it's a way we say we express towards another. But even then, sometimes even though we think we're demonstrating love, the other person doesn't feel that love. Because they don't recognize what you think is love. You think you're showing them love by providing for them. You're showing them love because you sit in the same room as you watch TV. You're expressing love because you live in the same house. expressing love when it comes to children is far more than just acknowledging them and saying hi. We find an expression of love in 1 Kings chapter 3 that the child doesn't even recognize. There we find a mother, two mothers. The one mother, during the night, she was, back then, you understand, they didn't have cribs. They had the babies, they would sleep with the children in their own beds, which is not really a safe thing to do. In the case of the one woman, she had rolled on top of her child and unfortunately taken its life without being aware of it. Well, in the night, she had taken, the first lady, she had taken the other woman's child, the second woman's child, and said that was hers, and swapped babies. You heard of the TV show, Wife Swap? This would probably be the next one, Baby Swap. Alright? Taken that baby and swapped it and said, this live one is mine. She killed hers. And they stood before Solomon, the wisest man that ever lived, never will live, according to God in his blessing of Solomon. And there they are standing before him. And the one gal, she says, hey, that is my child. The other one says, no, it's my child. And so Solomon had the answer. He knew what real love was. He said, bring the baby here. And he said, take a sword and cut that baby right down the middle. And each one could have half. Now you look at Solomon and say to yourself, well, how does that make him the wisest man? I mean, sure, we want to divide everything equally, right? That's fair. And so why not divide the kid in half? Well, he knew that the mom would not want that done. Her love would exceed even having the child herself. And so as a result, she cried out, no, don't kill him. She can have him. And Solomon immediately knew that was the mother. Her love for her own child was such that she was willing to give him up than to see him die. There was real genuine love there. There has to be real genuine love in our families. When in our families, we need to take time and spend it together. On our family, it's Friday night. Friday night is special night, so long as we can keep that day clear. On Friday night, it is somebody's night. We take turns in the family. And on your night, you get to choose what we eat. You get to choose the show we watch that night. You get to choose what activity or activities we do that night. And it's your night. You're the special one. You're the golden child. Or adult, or parent in that night. Alright? And so, we usually make the rule you gotta have something halfway decent to eat, not just candy and pop. Although that's always what comes out of the kid's mouth. We have to have candy and pop. You have five things. We try to keep that special because, you know, a lot of the days in the evenings, you know, we're not together. You know, we'll be together for supper, but then we got church or something else going on. So it's nice to have that time together. And then Saturdays, a lot of times Saturdays I've off and we can be as a family, but a lot of times there's different things going on. We try to make sure we carve out time to be with our kids in a close personal way, to spend that time with them. Sometimes it's reading a book. Sometimes it's playing a game. Sometimes it's watching the Husker game, which they don't really watch. Sometimes it's going out to eat. It's the purpose is to spend time, quality time, and your attention on them, and your interacting with them, and building that relationship. You know, James chapter 4 verse 8 tells us to draw near to God and He will draw near to you. Our relationship with God is to be such that we are striving to spend time with Him. We're striving to develop our relationship with Him. It's the same way it needs reflected in our children. When we invest our time and energy into our children, we show them our love for them. We need to make sure that we are showing our love to our children. That develops a trust. It develops a mentorship. You see some of the kids that we have here at church. When we have Awana, we break up. We like to break up in groups of 2 and 3 if we can. It's nice when we have extra leaders there, because then we can have these small groups and we can not only hear their verses but interact with the kids and spend more time with them. Help them to realize their importance and realize they can trust us. And not so much us, but God through us. And so as we invest that time and show that love, we find that we are actually training our kids not only to trust us and God, but teaching them how to love others as well. Well, along with that comes instruction. It says, train up a child. You have to have that love involved, but also the instruction. Children are not blank slates. Children are given personalities, and personalities that have good qualities, and personalities with bad qualities sometimes. Yeah, all the time. They have that bad quality in them. Doesn't always express itself, but it is there. Those things we need to make sure that we recognize as we instruct our kids. Now, they are ignorant. It's not calling them stupid. It means that they don't know any better. And so they're going to do what they naturally do, which is what? Wrong. Sin. Rebel. You ever notice you never have to teach a kid to lie? You never have to teach a kid to disobey? You never have to teach a kid to decide to have fun rather than to do a task they're supposed to do? That's that sin nature. And that sin nature, unfortunately, will run their lives. We have to help guide them to know what's appropriate, what's right, what's wrong. Some of those are social things. You know, it's polite to do this, it's not polite to do that. Some of those are moral things. What's right and wrong before God. And we need to be training them. And we do that. Deuteronomy chapter 6 verses 4 through 6 gives us the command to teach. Hear, O Israel, the Lord your Lord our God, the Lord is one. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your strength. And these words, which I command you today, shall be in your heart, and you shall teach them diligently to your children. You shall talk of them when you sit in your house, when you walk in the way, when you lie down, when you rise up. You shall bind them as a sign on your hand, and shall be frontlets between your eyes. You shall write them on your doorpost of your house, and on your gates. We are commanded. God gives the instruction. You are responsible to raise your children and teach them to fear God. That is vital for us to be doing. We need to teach them to fear God, to love Him, to obey Him. It is a foundation for the rest. We know what Exodus chapter 20 verse 12 says, honor your father and your mother. But before they get there, the reason they should do that is because of what God has done for them. And so we see that if they fear God, that means they're going to want to do what God tells them to do. Then, when it comes to these commands, well, you do them, of course, because God tells you to. You ever use that? Yes, you did. Remember the first time you said that? Remember the first time you said those words, because I told you so? You remember when you were a kid and you thought that was about the worst argument there ever was? Who are your parents to say, because I told you so? That doesn't even make sense. I mean, there's no reason or rhyme to it. Who says that I have to do what you say? When we teach our kids, though, because if they don't do it because we told them so, they find out that they should have done it because we told them so. We find here that when we teach our kids to fear God, they will know when He says, because I said so, to obey. They need to learn along with this. The instructions that we teach is to love their neighbor. Have a respect and concern for others. The last six commands of the Old Testament law, though we're not under the law, these moral commands still are applicable. We find them even in the New Testament. To honor your father and mother. We find that in Ephesians 6:1. We see that you're not to murder, not to commit adultery, not to steal, not to bear false witness against your neighbor. All these we find in the Sermon on the Mount. You're not to covet your neighbor's house. Don't want what's not yours. Don't let greed grab hold of you and cause you to do what's wrong. Matthew chapter 22, verse 39. Jesus says, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. In Philippians chapter 2, verse 3. In Philippians 2, 3, let nothing be done in selfish ambition or conceit, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than himself. That's an Awana verse. One of the verses they learn. They learn up here at least. Whether or not they learn it here, that's another story in their hearts. We need to teach and demonstrate to our children to respect other people. Respect other people, the way you talk to them, the way you interact with them, the way you keep your hands to yourself, the way you keep your hands off other people's property. These are lessons, instructions that we need to teach. Along with that, to live wisely in the world. The world teaches the feel-good philosophy. If it feels good, it's okay to do, as long as nobody else is getting hurt. And that's why we have some of these ideas of what a man and woman, what their rights are to be able to do. And because there's no foundations, no biblical foundation for what the world is teaching and what the world is believing, there's about anything goes. As long as nobody else gets hurt in the process. Well, we know that the Bible is quite clear that we need to be teaching responsibility and wisdom. And that wisdom comes from God. In the book of Proverbs, in chapter 1, verse 8 says, my son, hear the instruction of your father. Do not forsake the law of your mother. In chapter 2, verses 1 through 5, my son, if you receive my words and treasure my commands in you, so that you incline your ear to wisdom and apply your heart to understanding. Yes, if you cry out for discernment and lift up your voice for understanding, if you seek her as silver and search for her as hidden treasures, then you will understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. My son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commands. In chapter 4, verses 1 and 2, hear, my children, the instruction of your father, and give attention to knowing understanding. In Proverbs chapter 5, so that's chapter 3, chapter 4, 1, chapter 2, chapter 4, chapter 5, my son, pay attention to my wisdom, lend your ear to my understanding, that you may preserve discretion, your lips may keep knowledge. we see here over and over, chapter 6, verse 1, chapter 7, verse 1, we find, my son, the command, my son, these wise sayings. If you want to be successful as a kid, as a young man or young woman, do these things. This will give you wisdom. It'll keep you from doing sin. It'll get your heart to fear God. And you'll have good and successful days the rest of your life. This is wisdom that comes from the world, that doesn't come from the world, comes from God, but it's wisdom about the world around us. It's wisdom about being diligent. It's wisdom about being careful what we say. It's wisdom about staying away from the wayward wife, wayward woman. It's wisdom about how to get along in this world with finances, with enemies, with property, with all areas of life. How to keep oneself pure and untainted from the world and to serve God well. The wisdom that is there is invaluable. And it's our job as parents to teach our children. And it's our job as a church to come alongside the parents and teach these things to the children as well. It's interesting, if you have been in the WANA program. See, when I was in it, it was years ago, and I didn't remember a lot about it. We had Pals and Pioneers instead of TNT. Now, as we go through there, you see that what the WANA books really are is the catechism. Why did God give us the Bible is the question. The answer is, God gave us His Bible so we can know that He exists. God gave us the Bible, there's 8 of them. We learn those things, and then when the child asks the question, they have to say the question, the answer, and then I look at them, I said, prove it. And they have to know the Bible verse. Because the Bible verse is the proof text for what they're learning. It's not that we come up with an idea and say, well, we found a verse to match it. It's, this is what the Bible teaches. And we learn these things. They're being discipled in Awana, though they don't even recognize it. What an excellent tool that is. What we're doing is we're trying to come along and teach these kids how to live in their lives. But we have to be an example. We must be an example to these kids. Back in Deuteronomy chapter 6, verse 6 says, these words I command to you today shall be in your heart. In other words, you are to do these commandments. If we are not doing God's commandments, it reminds me of a friend that I had when I was growing up on Atlas Avenue, 2141 Atlas Avenue. I'm pretty impressed. I remember that. And right, we lived at a T. It was a T. And we were where you would run into our house off that T. And then on the corner on the right, looking north from our house, was another house. And that kid was just a little younger than I was. And his dad smoked. And I remember sitting in front of their house, right in front of their landing, their patio, just a step patio, and his dad, was sitting there smoking a cigarette. And he looked down and said to us, you know what, boys, I don't want ever to see you guys do this. This is a really bad habit. Do not smoke. It's a terrible thing. It's impossible to quit. And, you know, it was something he admitted he struggled with. Now, I knew about cigarettes. I knew there was no way that I was going to get involved with them. But immediately what came through my mind was the thought that if you don't want your son, Matt was his name, if you don't want Matt to smoke, you're going to have to quit. And the fact is, as far as I know, they never quit. They end up moving out of town. Whereas his son, I about guarantee he was smoking. Whatever we teach our children, if we don't exemplify it, it's not going to happen. You hear sometimes the kids on the street and they start swearing. Where are they getting that? Most of them are getting it from home. They pick up a lot of things from school. Don't get me wrong. I picked up a few things from school that I got in trouble for at home. But many of them, it's from home that they learn these things. And that's why we have to be an example as parents and grandparents. And then here at church, we have to be an example. We need to be careful of what we say and how we say it. We're not always careful with that, are we? I know sometimes I struggle with that. I mean something, but I don't say it quite right, and so it comes across wrong. And so my communication sometimes I have to work with. The example of loving the Lord and having a genuine godly love for Him, it shows through us. It can't just be on the outside, the academic part of us. It has to be in our hearts. It has to be real. If it's not there, the kids, they recognize that. And because they recognize it, we need to make sure that His Word is in our hearts. In John chapter 13, verse 15, we see Jesus says, Himself, He says, I have given you an example that you should do as I have done. Jesus is our example. We learn from example. You can tell me how to fix the car, change the brakes on my car. You can tell me how to do it, and I won't understand a lick of it. But if you show me once or twice, I'll be able to do it the rest of my days. Of course, you'll need to instruct me as you are showing me. I mean, just for me to watch you may not be as helpful as getting the information about what you're doing and how you're doing it. In the same way we live our lives, we need to live our lives to be examples, not just teaching. 1 Corinthians 11:1, Paul says, imitate me just as I also imitate Christ. In 1 Timothy chapter 4, verse 12, let no one despise your youth, but be an example of believers in word and conduct, in love, in spirit, in faith, and purity. In 1 Peter 2:21, it says that Peter writes, for to this you were called, because Christ also suffered for us, leaving us an example that you should follow in His steps. We find that the Old Testament is even given for an example for us. We need to follow the example of Christ. We need to be the example like Paul was to imitate after Christ. Finally, discipline. Discipline. Discipline is required. Instruction is not enough. If there's no consequences in school, there's no reason to do school. If you will not get a bad grade on a paper that you turn in or don't turn in, do you know what that means? There's no point in doing it. If there doesn't make a difference if I can get an A by doing my work or if I can get an A by not doing my work, there's no reason to do the work. I remember working, I was a little frustrated at one of the jobs I had. It was a building security. And I worked diligently to strive to do my job the best of my ability. And then there's other ones that worked the same job and they did basically nothing. And I was getting paid the same amount as they were. And I said to myself, why am I going to work so hard to get paid the same thing they're going to get paid? Well, I didn't do it just for the pay. I wanted to honor God and my employer. But those things come across, it frustrates you because you think, well, wait a minute. Either, you know, I should be paid more, or we should just take care of those that aren't going to do the job. The same is true at home. There's no discipline. There's no incentive to do what's right. There's no reason to do it. It can be done with rewards, or it can be done with discipline. We know that in disciplining, we are the parent or the leader, We make the rules, and therefore we must enforce those rules. Proverbs 29:15 says, "A rod and rebuke give wisdom, but a child left to himself brings shame to his mother." In Proverbs 22:15, "Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child. A rod of correction will drive it far from him." Discipline must be done in love. In Ephesians chapter 6, verse 4, "Fathers, do not provoke your children to wrath, but bring them up in the training and admonition of the Lord." We know that it's not just a matter of getting angry and beating on your kids. That's not what discipline is. Now, the kids might read it that way, even though that's not what you're doing. Your whole point is to help bring them up to be godly young men and women. And in doing so, it must be a matter of discipline of love. I love you, so I have to do this. We've told our kids this many times. We love you. We want you to learn this lesson. So I hate to do this, but I've got to do something to help you learn that this is not acceptable. Or you have to take your responsibility. And so, a few minutes later, with lots of tears, then hopefully the problem is corrected until the next day when you have to do it again. But, you discipline out of love, striving to bring honor to God. Proverbs chapter 3, verse 11 and 12 shows us that even God himself corrects us. "My son, do not despise the discipline of the Lord, nor detest his correction. For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father the son in whom he delights." Discipline is a matter of love. It's also, discipline must be effective. Many times, discipline is being sent to time out in the corner. And many times, depending on the heart of the child, the personality of the child, that doesn't do anything but give them a restriction that they can play in that corner now. The discipline has to be effective. It doesn't have to be overkill. I have two children that I can literally look at and make cry. And then I have two children that I nearly have to beat to make cry. You know their personalities and you discipline them accordingly in a way that will teach them and correct them. It may be a spanking, which causes a sting, not a bruise, but causes enough of a sting to show that what's being done is improper. My kids, almost all my kids now are in the age where it's not necessary to do that. They comprehend the effect of being grounded, which means on your bed, no books, no toys, no TV, they don't have a TV in the room, but no TV, no video games, nothing. You get the clothes on your back, you get your bed, maybe you'll get homework. And that's it. And the whole goal is to be so bored that they'll never do it again. And if they don't learn from that, then think of it as practice for when they get in jail and all they get is the sheets on their bed, the clothes on their back. The purpose is to help them understand what's acceptable, what's not acceptable, to train them so they can become those young men and young women that honor God. It must be effective in what we do. Proverbs 23, verse 13 says, "Do not withhold correction from a child, for if you beat him with a rod, he will not die." The point there isn't beating a child. The point is, whatever discipline that you give to them is not going to be as harmful as down the road when they need serious discipline, when they're going to be, the consequences are going to be much greater. So teach them now before the consequences are much greater. Finally, discipline must be consistent. If there's a rule in the house, you have to be in at this time or else, or your room has to be clean, or you're grounded, then every single time, that's what has to happen. And then as a result, the kids will see this is the way that things need to be done. In the end, In the end, the goal of a parent ought to be raised children who honor God with their entire lives. And the goal for Park Lane Baptist Church is to help parents raise children who honor God with their entire lives. Tonight, as we have seen who children are, their importance to God, Jesus says, don't restrict them from coming. We have a very high responsibility to train children as God sees fit for us to have that ministry to train them. If there are our own children, if they are our grandchildren, if they are the children in the neighborhood, we have done an excellent job in training some of these kids. So when they come here, they have a much greater understanding of how to behave. It's been effective. And Lord willing, through our ministry to them and their families, these will become young men and women who love the Lord and who will serve Him with their whole heart. May we be that example as we honor God with our hearts. Father, I ask that You would help us, that our own lives, we will love You with all our heart, soul, mind, and strength. Dear God, I pray that You would help us to do this so that way we may train, not just academically, but out of love, out of concern for these kids. May we, through prayer and diligent study of Your Word, may we, through expressing Your love and expressing Your truth, be able to see these young ones come up and to know You well. Father, I ask that You would give us guidance, that we may be wise in how we do these things, not assuming the role of a parent, but being wise teachers and mentors for these kids. Father, I ask that You be with these kids, help them that their hearts would be for You. I ask this in Jesus' name. Amen.